Hey guys, and welcome into another edition of Ask the Doctor. This, of course, is not where we would normally start an Ask the Doctor, and that's because we are getting ready for our high school football season. We'll be doing an interview with some of the Northside doctors on our pregame show on the Northside Hospital Cherokee pregame show on the WLJA Game of the Week, so make sure you tune in every Friday night for that. Now let's meet our doctors.
We're here today with Dr. Stephen Rhodes and Dr. Matthew Simmons. Guys, thank you for being with us today.
Sure, yeah. Thank you so much for having us.
All right. I guess we'll take our mask off just so you guys can hear us a little bit better during the answers. But we do recommend everybody get vaccinated. We're both vaccinated. Stay safe.
All right, guys, let's jump into this. The first question I have for you, what is the rotator cuff?
So a rotator cuff is a series of muscles and tendons that we use to help mobilize our shoulder. And so just to show you on a small model here, those muscles come off of the shoulder blade predominantly and attach to the top portion of your arm and help to move your arm in all directions, whether it be from a rotational standpoint, elevating the arm up and down, and kind of every motion in between. And it's those muscles that are responsible for helping to move your arm in those directions. And when those muscles break down, that's when we run into a few problems with the rotator cuff. So.
And what type of injuries are associated with the rotator cuff?
We see really a lot across the board when it comes to injuries. So you can see things from as simple as sprains or strains of the rotator cuff, where the tissue can get just inflamed or irritated through routine course of activities. In some cases, those may progress to more advanced type injuries, where you may see incomplete tears or what we refer to as partial tears of the rotator cuff. And in some cases, you may lose full integrity of those muscles or tendons and where they completely separate away. And that's where you get into a full thickness tear type situation.
And they can usually occur traumatically. Some patients will fall down and land on their shoulder, may have a dislocation, but it'll tear the tendon away. But more commonly than that, it's more of a gradual wear and tear thing, where over time it kind of gradually will fray and tear and progress going forward.
How does someone get a rotator cuff tear?
Again, I think Steve did a good job describing, but most of these are tears, so to speak, of attrition, where just over the years the tissue can wear away. And one of the analogies I make for patients is it's much like a rope that just subtly the fibers unravel over time. But in other cases where you have an injury where you suffer a fall, or in some instances where car accidents or other things where there's a lot of stress that's placed on the shoulder in certain situations, you can develop more of an acute tear that happens in a pretty quick time frame. In either direction, it's important to distinguish that with your doctor, because acute tears may be something that we tend to be a little more aggressive on the initial treatment, whereas the gradual tears or the tears of attrition, we can typically work through a longer period of time to help with some promoting some healing.
If someone does get a rotator cuff tear, what are the symptoms?
Well, the biggest symptom that I see with patients is pain. That's largely the number one thing that they complain about. And that pain typically, when they describe it as pain that begins anywhere in the shoulder region itself, it may radiate down in and around the level of the elbow. One of the things that Dr. Rhodes and I really work hard on is trying to distinguish what other causes of pain may be there. And so that's something that we're always mindful of when we're interviewing patients and talking with them, is trying to determine, is this organic to the rotator cuff itself, or is it something that may be some overlap from the cervical spine or portions of the neck that's causing some of that pain as well. But pain being the biggest predominating factor that we'll see in those cases. Well, the nice thing is we do have a lot of non-operative treatments that are available to patients, and all things that we can readily employ in the office. And so it's a very easy transition for a lot of patients to begin that treatment process. Physical therapy, medications are two of the things that we can use in more of a early sense to help with symptom management, helping to bring pain levels down. Most of those medications are in the family of what we call non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. So that's the medicines like ibuprofen, Aleve, that family of medicines. Those can help bring some of the inflammation and the irritation down through the tissue. Therapy can help to restore some of the normal functioning of the rotator cuff, help to rebuild the muscle tissue, help to recondition the tendon tissues, and those are great initial starts and where we can begin. For more extensive type injuries and ones where you may have, say, an incomplete tear, there's some newer techniques that have been in the market for now for about the last 5 to 10 years that have been readily acceptable. And one of those is a treatment technique called platelet-rich plasma. And that's where your blood's taken from a peripheral source. So we usually use a vein in the arm. We then pull the platelets and the plasma portions off of the blood blood and then re-inject that into the area to help with helping the tissue to heal. There are some other injections in the form of cortisone injections and other things that may help with inflammation, but we have a wide array of options there from a non-operative standpoint that are available.
And what are the treatment options for a torn rotator cuff?
Yeah, so then most of the time we try to treat these non-operatively as much as possible, especially in those kind of wear and tear, degenerative tears. So generally those patients will go through the therapy and everything, but once they've tried all those things and they have continuing pain that affects their quality of life, their ability to sleep, and their just function, and just pain that gets in the way of enjoying day-to-day activity, then we start to talk about surgical options. And it depends on the extent of the tear. Like he was talking about, Dr. Simmons, you have partial tears, you have complete tears. So for the partial tears, a lot of times it may be because there's a bone spur kind of in your shoulder that can kind of rub against the tendon. And like I said, with the rope, it's like something rubbing against the rope and just slowly kind of fraying that down. And so on those partial tears, we can go in there arthroscopically. So that means small incisions kind of around the shoulder with a little camera, and then we can shave off the little spur. We can clean up any of the damaged or torn tissue and kind of give me the healthy tissue behind. And then we can actually get a good visualization of everything else in the joint and make sure there's nothing else going on. Because sometimes you can also have biceps pathology or cartilage damage or other things that are creating issues as well, and treat those at the same time. And there's a newer technology in the last handful of years that I've been doing a fair bit of, where you can take some tissue from a cow's Achilles tendon, and you take the collagen from that, and it creates like a patch that you arthroscopically through the small incisions will lay on top of the rotator cuff tendon, and then you can have these little plastic staples that help attach it, and it actually dissolves over about 3 to 4 months. Your body resorbs it, but it replaces it with your own tissue. So it kind of stimulates your body to kind of heal itself and get replaced with own normal healthy tissue. For the patients that have a complete tear where it's 100% torn away from the bone, those things aren't really an option, and we have to actually reattach everything back down. Again, it's all done arthroscopically most of the time these days. And so we use little plastic screws and a combination of that and sutures or stitches that we pass through the tissue and use the screws to kind of anchor it back down to bone or reattach everything back to where it's supposed to be.
How long does it take to recover from a rotator cuff surgery?
Yeah, so the surgery itself is outpatient. So you come in, you have surgery the same day. You get put to sleep for the surgery under general anesthetic. We usually will do a nerve block as well, which is where anesthesia will do an injection kind of at the base of your neck above your shoulder that numbs up your arm, typically for 1 or 2 days, depending on which medicine they use, to kind of help out with your post-op pain. But go home after that day. After a full repair from a complete tear, you're going to be in a sling for about 6 weeks typically, and you won't start physical therapy until usually about 4 to 6 weeks out with my protocols, and you can expect about a 6 month full recovery to get all the way over it. For the patients that have the partial tear, where we just kind of clean things up, shave off the bone spurs, or even do the patch, those patients will be in a sling for 2 days instead of 6 weeks, starting range of motion and therapy within a few days, but it still takes 3 to 4 months for that patch to kind of heal things. So you're still looking at generally about a 4 to 6 month recovery even for that one.
What are the risks of a surgery for a rotator cuff repair?
So anytime you have surgery and somebody cuts skin, bleeding and infection are going to be risk. With arthroscopic surgery, those risks are pretty small, less than 1%. With, you know, comorbidities like diabetes or other kind of issues, you can have an increased risk of that. You do usually get antibiotics before surgery, but they're not necessary after, as long as everything goes the way it's supposed to go. Stiffness is a risk anytime you operate on a joint. So usually with arthroscopic surgery, it's not a huge risk, and we can usually work it out, but occasionally you'll get enough scar tissue where you may have to go back in there to remove it, but it's pretty uncommon these days with arthroscopic surgery. The bigger concerns are going to be getting the tissue to heal. So surgically, what we do is we reattach the tissue back to the bone, but your body has to heal the tissue back together. And so sometimes, especially your diabetic, older age, smoker, things like that, it can affect your body's ability to heal that back down. So if it doesn't heal, then you'll continue to have pain, you may continue to have weakness, you continue to have symptoms, and you won't get the benefit that we want from the surgery. And that's the biggest thing that we concern ourselves with, is making sure that tendon heals after we reattach it back down.
In some cases, I would add, and when you have patients who are very high risk for, you know, not healing appropriately, or they have enough of a tear that's extended out and retracted away from the bone to a high level, they may not always be great surgical candidates in those settings, because you almost know that the risk of re-injury is going to be high. And so in some of those instances, we'll counsel the patient about the risk and weigh that out with them individually when we have that discussion as providers with them on what the best option may be and where, you know, where where they're best suited to fall in the treatment paradigm. So,
absolutely.
How will someone know when their repair is healed?
So we get asked that a lot kind of after surgery. The main thing we look for is our typical clinical progression. We expect your pain to improve and either almost go away completely or go away completely. We expect you to get close to full range of motion, if not full range of motion. We expect your strength to improve. We expect you to clinically get to where you're minimally to asymptomatic. As long as you hit all those progressions, then we don't need to do anything specifically to kind of check and make sure it's been healing. If for any reason during the course of the recovery we're not making the progress we expect to make, having more pain than expected, motion's not improving, still weaker than we expect you to be, we usually will do an MRI at that point in time to double check the integrity of the healing to make sure we don't need to do something differently.
Now, I would add in those patients who, let's say they have a failed outcome or they have, just a rotator cuff repair that doesn't take well, there are surgical options on the back end that we do specifically to address things like arthritis and other conditions that may develop down the line. And Steve does a great job of these as well in doing joint replacements for the shoulder in those patients who have had rotator cuff tears that maybe were not repairable, ones that didn't take well, through the repair process. And down the road develop more arthritic conditions of the shoulder. There's great options in two different ways that we can do shoulder replacements and other techniques down the line to help that out as well. So.
Is there anything you can recommend to prevent a rotator cuff injury?
So it's a good question, and I don't know that we can ever prevent a rotator cuff injury. If we all live long enough, we'll have a rotator cuff injury. I've dealt with it myself from, my wife deciding that we needed to paint our house and paint all the trim. And so I've dealt with my share of tendonitis and irritation of my rotator cuff. And so at any point in time, we could all be at risk for, some degree of injury. One of the things we encourage some of our young athletes and other people who are actively involved in sport and put a lot of stress on the rotator cuff is good rotator cuff maintenance. So lots of exercise, lots of activation maneuvers of the cuff with exercise bands, and a lot of the things we do from a therapy standpoint on the, kind of the post irritation standpoint, we do that in some of a preventative sense as well. And so if you can do those similar type exercises, that can help to bolster your cuff, help to maintain as much of that integrity of the ligaments, the tendons and the muscle as much as we can. So,
what sports are rotator cuff injuries most common in?
Baseball is probably the number one we see here locally in this area. And if we lived in other parts of the country or other parts of the world, you'd see similar throwing type, patterns. With Atlanta being a big tennis market, we see a lot of shoulder-related problems related to tennis. But baseball and tennis are probably our two biggest that we run into, with football contributing a fair amount, just being in the part of the country where we are. So
I wouldn't say anything necessarily specifically to football. I mean, it's mostly overhead athletes. I mean, your quarterbacks, stuff like that, are going to be the ones going to be more at risk for having some sort of rotator cuff kind of issue. And with almost any kind of joint or tendon issue, maintaining good flexibility, maintaining good strength kind of throughout the year and off season, just to make sure you kind of protect yourself, is going to be important for all those athletes.
And most of the throwing athletes we see who are having, especially at a young age, earlier issues that are kind of coming into play. So you're, 15 to say 20-year-olds who are already having some rotator cuff irritation. There's usually some form of a mechanical issue that's contributing to that. Most people in that age group have a tissue that's very healthy and, has a lot of resiliency and can really recoil and heal, with good satisfaction. And so most of those cases, those patients have some degree of a mechanical failure that, whether it's a pitching mechanic or they're having an injury elsewhere that's causing them to overthrow or do other changes in the way that they're delivering pitches that can contribute to that in many ways. And we've got some avenues here in the office and connections in the area with local providers who can do some video analysis in those kind of situations and really help to further diagnose those things, outside of the office, where we may not have all the, the capabilities to necessarily put you on a pitching mound here in the office. But we do have the ability to work with some of our partners in the area to accomplish those goals of figuring out what mechanically maybe, the basis of what's causing the injury for the patient.
Dr. Rhodes and Dr. Simmons, thank you for being with us today. This has been Ask the Doctor, presented by our friends at Northside Hospital, Cherokee.